Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Deep Psychology Podcast. Today we're going to be setting out my model of how our experience is primary and why the scientific model of reality is faulty. Before we get there, just want to remind you that we have new long form episodes every Wednesday, snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Gently encourage you to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to keep up to date. And a quick mention, you can stay up to date with my latest episodes and projects via my newsletter. There's a link in the description and you can find my books there too. This is a really crucial episode today because what I've done in the first three episodes this month, the first three long form episodes on the 1st, the 8th and the 15th of April, is that I've sort of been exposing the limits of science and I've been showing how our usual assumptions about how science works are faulty. And I've been sort of tearing down a lot of dogma in science. Look at the first episode in this month on the 1st of April called The Hidden Dogma in Scientific Thinking as a prime example. But what I've not really done so much, there's been tidbits here and there, but what I've not really done is offered a convincing alternative. You know, if I'm saying that how science understands reality is fundamentally limited and it's conceptual and it's secondary and it's adding on sort of a lot of conceptual fog, then what's the alternative? And that is exactly what we're going to be addressing today. So my objective in this series is not to simply expose the weaknesses of science, it's to actually propose something that is more holistic and that can deal with the limitations of science without having to deny its strengths. And I hope that this model I'm going to be presenting will help us to do that. So this is part of my April series on the philosophy of science, and you really want to go back and check out those earlier episodes after you've listened to this one, if you haven't done so already. Both the snippets and the long form Wednesday episodes are going to be really helpful for you. So what are the crucial points I'm going to make today? We'll just cover these briefly, and then the rest of the episode is really just me going into a lot of depth and really explaining what I'm going to say here. So the main point is that our experience is primary. I'm going to explain what experience is, because if you don't understand that, then the whole model kind of goes under the bus, or you won't understand what I'm saying. Everything that we know appears in experience, and this includes the bread and butter of science, which are concepts, theories and measurements. The only reality we have access to is the ongoing flow of our experience right now. Nowness is primary, and everything occurs within nowness. And you can think of nowness, I'm going to talk more about what this means just as we go on here, but nowness really just means the immediate unfolding of experience. And finally, that life fundamentally is not conceptual. Concepts describe life, but they are not life itself, and fundamentally our experience is not conceptual. So let's set up this discussion a little bit, because I want to just quickly recap sort of some of our main conclusions this month from the previous three episodes. First of all, that what science basically tries to do is it tries to ground reality in a physical world governed by laws, by fixed laws that exists independently of us. So it will say things like, we may have our experience, you know, we may smell things, we may see things, we may experience emotions and thoughts, but really all of that can be explained by brain activity, which, you know, the brain is a physical organ, and inside the brain there is activity happening that generates all of our experience. So our experience, our reality, and all of reality can be explained by physical phenomena. And for example, if you look at the world around you, what science will say is that, you know, if you're looking at the room around you right now, that, you know, your brain is generating an ongoing moving image of the room that is around you. It's doing so in the visible spectrum of light, and you know, the room is physical, and you're seeing you're seeing the parts of the room that are physical. Now, that might sound really stupid and obvious, but that is the paradigm we're using. Like, that is literally what science has quote-unquote discovered, and that's how we tend to see the world. So this is what science tries to do. It tries to ground everything in a physical world governed by laws and existing independently of us. And that existing independently of us part is very important as well, because this is also what science does. It will say things like, well, you might not be able to see New York City right now, unless you live there, of course. Hello to you all. Those of you who live in New York City, you might not be able to see New York City right now, but that it certainly exists, because the world is physical, and therefore the world doesn't just disappear when you can't see, you know, what is beyond your current senses. You know, New York City exists, whether you can experience it or not, exists independently of you. Okay, so listen, I'm not going to go into this point too much, because I've spent a whole episode talking about it in February called Is the World Physical? So go and listen to that. It's about 50 minutes long, explaining what the problems are with this model. But this is just what science tries to do. So let's just take that into account. What science has sort of told us implicitly, sometimes explicitly, but mostly this is implicit, and it's implicit in our understanding of the world, is that we experience the world kind of almost as though our senses were a flashlight. So it's almost as though by interacting with our small sort of little slice of the world that we experience, we are able to perceive it because of our senses, because our senses enable us to access the little section of the world that is within our sensory range. For example, right, you can see the room around you or the scene around you, and you can't see what is beyond that. So you can think of your sensory field as like a flashlight that lets you see what is currently accessible to your sense of sight, but nothing beyond it. But what is beyond it is certainly there, and it's independently of you being able to see it or not. So in this way, you know, when you go into the woods at night with a flashlight, why am I saying flashlight? I should really say torch, because I'm from the UK, but there we go. I'm catering to my audience. You turn a torch on in the woods, you can see that little section of the woods, and then, you know, the darkness around it is there, whether you can see what's in darkness or not. That's sort of what science tells us that our experience is doing. So this torch that shines a light on our little section of the world and makes that accessible to us through our senses. So that's fundamentally how science understands our experience. It understands that we are perceiving a world that is certainly there, and it certainly exists permanently and independently of us. And our brain is really what generates all of our experience. Now, my model doesn't necessarily reject this as like a pragmatic model. So I accept there are pragmatic reasons to understand reality in this way. But actually what I think my model does is it cuts to the core of how we actually experience life. The core of what it actually means to be alive moment to moment to moment. Like, it's very immediate in a way that the model of materialism or of naive realism just means that the world is physical and exists independently of you, and the only real world is the physical world. That these are conceptual overlays. Now, of course, I've spoken about this more at length in previous episodes in all of my philosophy episodes, and I've got a link to those in the description. But my model does, it goes to the heart of what it actually means to experience life. And our experience of life is not that there's a permanent external world. It simply isn't. That concept is a conceptual overlay that we add on to try and make sense of life. And it might have pragmatic use, but it's not actually, phenomenologically, it's not accurate. And so my model is what we might call a consciousness first model or an experience first model. I'm taking consciousness or experience to be primary. So before we get into the model itself, we have to talk about what is experience, because experience means many things in many different contexts. So if I just say experience, well, that might be rather confusing, won't it? So in this context, experience just means the entirety of your current experience. So you have your visual field, you have your auditory field, you have your somatic field, you know, your sense of touch. You have emotions and you have your mind. You know, you have thoughts and images that are in your mind. And of course, all of these combine in a very intricate and complicated way to generate your experience or to create your current experience. That's what experience is. It just means your current sensory input. And in this context, I'm going to take consciousness, awareness, experience, and being to mean the same thing. So again, consciousness, the word consciousness is a term with many definitions. The word awareness is a term with many definitions. And the word being has many definitions. But in this context, and I want to emphasize in this context, I'm going to take them all to mean the same thing. And they kind of, they all mean the same thing, but they all have different flavors to them. And you might not quite understand all these different flavors at the moment, but, you know, they all mean essentially the same thing. They just mean your current experience of life, literally, right now. This is experience. Let's also define what nowness means. And this is a strange one, because nowness just means experience. It just means your current experience, but it's important to realize that all you have is your current experience. You don't have any other experience. All you have is your current experience. So if I say nowness, I'm meaning your experience, but I'm emphasizing the fact that your current experience is all you have. Like, if I just say experience as like your sensory experience, you might take this to be like this vague, abstract concept. Like, you know, he's talking about the fact of that humans experience things. No. What I'm really meaning is that, and this is a deeper point that we're going to really look into very directly in just a moment. What I mean is that your experience is all you have, and it's all you've ever had. And in fact, more precisely, all you've ever had is your current experience of life. That's all you've ever had. Everything that you've experienced, everything that has ever happened to you in your entire life has all been current experience. And what I don't mean that your current experience now has always been the same, because clearly your experience is constantly changing. What I mean is all you ever have is your current experience. You don't have the past or the future. You don't have past or future experiences ever. You only have your current experience. And that has always been true. And it will always be true. So, again, this is not an abstraction. This isn't just like a theory of mine. It's actually very direct. And I want you to show you how direct this is. And if you understand this, we're going to do an exercise, an exercise that takes you into direct contact with your experience, which is a bit of an oxymoron, because you're always in direct contact with your experience, because there's nothing, you cannot possibly experience anything else. But to help you realize that that's the case, we're going to do this little exercise. And if you understand, and if you do this exercise enough, and you really grasp what I'm trying to get at here, this is going to really, wow, it's going to really impact how you understand reality. And since you're listening, I'm assuming you're interested in understanding reality. So here we go. I want you to get comfortable. I want you to let go of distractions. Like if you're doing something else at the moment, maybe you're cooking, I want you to stop doing that or to come back to this whenever you can. Really set aside a period of 10 minutes for this exercise. Stop what you're doing, sit down, and sit comfortably, sit relaxed, untense your body, sit symmetrically. You don't have to sit in like a meditative position. This is kind of a meditation, but you don't have to do that. Just sit comfortably and set aside all distractions. Nothing too elaborate. What I want you to do is to bring, with your eyes open, keep your eyes open. I want you to notice right now that you have your visual field. So you can see whatever you're seeing. And that you cannot see whatever you are not seeing. You also are hearing whatever you're hearing right now. You're hearing my voice. You're hearing sounds in the room around you. You might have sounds coming from outside your house. You're hearing all of this, and you're not hearing what you cannot hear. Also, you're feeling whatever you're feeling right now. You might be feeling the pressure of the seat or the sofa on your body. You might be feeling your clothes. You might be feeling the temperature of the room. You might be feeling subtle movements of air on your body. Whatever you're feeling right now, notice that that is what you're feeling, and that you're not feeling what you are not feeling. Also realize that you're probably having thoughts right now. You might be thinking about this exercise. You might be commenting on this exercise. You might be commenting on me in some way. Or you might be thinking about what's coming next, you know, what you have to do later on. You might be thinking about what's happened earlier today. You might be thinking about something you've been ruminating over for the last little while. Just notice whatever you're thinking is whatever you're thinking, and that you're not thinking whatever you're not thinking. Also, notice that whatever emotions you have right now, you might not have any strong emotions, but you always have subtle emotional undertones. Maybe subtle joy, subtle boredom, subtle sadness, subtle anxiety, subtle this, subtle that. You might be having strong emotions. I'm guessing you're probably not, if you're listening to a podcast and you're sitting down. But whatever, you know, whatever's going on in your emotional world, that is what's going on. And you can only experience the emotions you're experiencing. So I just want you to notice everything that's happening for you right now. That may seem silly. You may say, well, Ross, this is obvious. But it's actually very profound. And what will help you notice this, notice what we're trying to do here, is to try and get a sense of anything that is beyond your current experience. So try and get a sense of anything that you cannot see with your eyes, you cannot hear with your ears, that you cannot feel in your body, that you cannot feel as an emotion in your body, and that you cannot imagine. Try and get a sense of anything like that. Like maybe it's a friend. You know, you can imagine a friend. So you're not currently experiencing them, but you can say, well, that's beyond my experience. You know, my friend is beyond my experience because they exist independently of me. They exist independently of my experience. Or it might be the nearest town or the nearest city or, the street around the corner. You know, a place that isn't within your current experience. You can say, well, okay, I'm not experiencing it now. I'm not literally in that street or that city, but it's there because I know it's there because I can imagine it and I've been there before. And anything else, even the most subtle intimations of anything outside your experience right now. Even if it's something that is not so obvious, it's something maybe you can't even like point to it or express what it is, describe it. Right, here's the kicker, and this is like the key of this entire exercise, is to realize that that thing, what you call this thing that is outside your experience, or the sense of this thing that is outside your experience, that whole experience, that whole concept, that whole sense or intimation is within your experience. And the thing itself that you're trying to experience that is not in your experience, that thing is only, you only know it through your current experience of it. You only know your friend through the image of you, the friend that you have in your mind. You only know the city because you're imagining it. Or you only know the street around the corner because you're imagining it, or anything else. You only know it because you're imagining it as part of your current experience. And more generally, step out from that specific thing right now, or specific things, and just try to find something outside your current experience. Like really try to like get a sense of something and try to like locate it and try and find that it is outside your current experience. Like try and find something outside your current experience. Keep trying to find something outside your current experience. Keep digging in your senses, in your mind, in your body, in your entire embodied experience. Try and keep trying to find something outside your current experience. And what I want you to realize is whenever you find something that appears to be outside your current experience, that thing is not outside your current experience. The only way you know that thing is through your current experience. And again, if you really care about understanding what we're trying to get at here, trying to understand the fundamental nature of human experience, I want you to repeat this until it really hits you not as like an idea, but it actually hits you and you can feel it, and it like has an impact on you that you cannot find anything outside your current experience. And well, that basically means your current experience is all that is. Literally, your current experience is all there is. All right, you can let go of that exercise and you can just go back into ordinary mode, not trying to do anything, just listening. And we're going to now sort of shift into some insights that this little exercise gives us, or it gives us at least a window into these insights. Some of these insights take more work, but this exercise gives us a good window into these. And it's a good way to sort of bridge into the model. And really, these insights form the heart of my model. First of all, and this is no small thing, is that there is nothing outside your current experience. There is nothing outside nowness. In other words, there is nothing outside consciousness. There is nothing outside awareness. And this is empirically verifiable. You know, if you say, well, listen, I don't know New York City exists, but, you know, I'm going to assume it exists because I can imagine it, and because, people have told me that it exists, and, you know, well, science tells us. But what is all that? All of that is your own experience. That is your thoughts, that is your emotions, that's your memory at work, that's your, you know, images your mind of New York City in your mind. This is all your own experience. Only the idea of New York City is your own experience. And everything else that you're associating with that idea is your own experience. And this is true of absolutely everything that you can imagine as being outside your own experience. All imagination is within your own experience. Nowness contains everything, literally. You cannot find anything outside of nowness. In this way, nowness is like a container outside of which there is nothing. Kind of like an ocean that extends endlessly in all directions. It contains everything by default, and any idea that it doesn't, or any sense that it doesn't, is also part of nowness. You see, nowness is not, you see, this is why it's beyond concepts, because all your concepts are within nowness, and so you cannot use concepts to arrive to now, because nowness already contains everything, including the effort to try and find nowness, right? In other words, and again, this is sort of the same, a different way of saying the same thing, is that experience or consciousness or awareness is primary. And the only way you know anything is through experience or consciousness or awareness. You cannot know anything outside of it. And knowing, I don't just mean knowing as in, I know that I was born in the 90s. I don't mean that. I mean, the only way you know an object, you know, look at an object in front of you. The only way you know that is through your experience of it. You don't know it any other way. That's it. Knowing is like, the only way you can contact anything is through your experience. And this, of course, includes science. The only way you can access science is through your experience. The only way you can access theories is through your experience. The only way you can study science is through your experience. The only way you can read equations is through your experience. All of these things are within your experience. That's the only place they have ever been, is within your experience. Life is the ongoing flow of experience. The only thing you know of life is your moment-to-moment experience of it. You know nothing else. You cannot, this is a point we're going to go into further, but you cannot rest this experience on something else. You cannot say, well, this is happening because I was, you know, this is happening because the brain is generating it all. No, that is a concept within your experience. The brain, the only reason you know the brain is through your experience. What do you know of the brain fundamentally? We spoke about this in my episode from April the 8th, 2 weeks ago, called The Limits of Brain Science, Why Correlation is Not Causation. The only way you know the brain, the only reason that you know what a brain is because of your experience of the brain. And I don't mean that you're experiencing the brain from the inside out. What I mean is that the brain has appeared in experience, that you've seen images of it in books and on the internet. You've seen diagrams of it, maybe in school or at university. Maybe you've seen an animal's brain now and then. That's literally it. The brain for you is literally just visual, you know, it's literally just the tidbits of visual experience that you've had of the brain. So the brain has appeared in experience as images of a brain somewhere. That's all you've ever known of the brain. You've never seen your own brain. You've never seen your own brain. So the only way you know the brain is through experience. And you might say, well, you might take the scientific view and say that the only way experience occurs is because of the brain. Well, I addressed this in that episode, The Limits of Brain Science, Why Correlation is Not Causation. So go there for like a full explanation of why that isn't true. But again, that is a concept. You know, to say that the experience depends on the brain, that is a concept. You don't actually know that. Like that's not what you experience of life. What you experience is your experience, and the actual brain itself doesn't appear within that. You've never seen your own brain. And the only reason you know what a brain is because other people have told you and because you've seen images of it. And all of that is just your experience, right? So you're piecing together your experience into a story about what a brain is. But you don't know what a brain is, and you have no evidence that the brain causes experience, or that experience is grounded in the brain somehow. And similarly, we never actually experience the brain causing anything. What we experience is our experience. And in our experience, we see correlation happening. You know, we can hook ourselves up to an EMG, I believe it's called. Forgive me if that's wrong. You know, we can hook ourselves to brain monitoring machines and we say, well, if I lift my right arm, then I can see on the screen that, you know, there's activity in certain areas of my brain. But again, all that's all occurring within your own experience. And so we see simultaneous events, you know, we see someone raising their arm and we see brain activity on a screen or whatever, and we put the two together and we say, well, the brain is causing experience. But again, that's a scientific bias. We could quite easily say, well, no, actually, me raising my arm, which is more primary, if you think about it, it's more primary to being human is raising your arm than someone measuring your brain activity on a screen. You know, one of them you do every single day, and another one you might do once or twice in your entire life. Although if that's your job, maybe not. But I could say, well, no, it's actually the movement of the arm is causing brain activity. I can make that argument. It doesn't matter. That's not the primary argument I'm making today. What I'm basically saying is that all we know of the brain is experiential knowledge. And that's all we have ever known. All any neuroscientist has ever known is experiential knowledge of the brain. Regardless of how complicated their theories are and the equations and the theories, all they know, that the only reason they know their theories and equations is because of their experience. And you cannot couch experience in the brain. That is basically my model. Just at the end of the episode, I'm going to give you some further insights into the implications of this model. And next week, I'm going to have to give you more because this is quite groundbreaking. It's not anything really tremendously radical, to be honest, but unless you're scientifically minded, it might seem pretty radical. But there's a lot of implications, and it takes time to really understand the implications, and really years and years will pass and you'll come to more and more deeper realizations about the fact that there's nothing outside your current experience, because it's heavy shit, basically. What we're going to do before I go into some further insights is I'm going to explain, you know, how does this relate to science? Because you might say, well, Ross, you've spent this whole month talking about the limitations of science, and you're saying, well, I'm proposing a model that isn't throwing science under the bus and that builds on top of science, but this sounds exactly like what you're doing. It sounds like you're rejecting science and you're saying, well, all we know is our experience, so science is nonsense. Let me explain. I've got some explaining to do. Listen, what I'm saying is that our experience is primary. It's the basic fact of life, is our experience. And because it's so basic and fundamental, we often overlook it. You know, all you've ever had of life is your experience of it. That's all you've ever had. And you might say, well, that's obvious, Ross, but do you really get it? If you don't get it, go back and do the guided exercise and really do it until you really deeply understand what I'm saying here. All you've had is your experience and nothing else. So if you don't understand your experience, you don't understand life, and you cannot understand science, right? Experience is primary. If you don't have your experience of life, there is no life for you. Life is experience, okay? Now, the problem with science, I feel like I've said that so many times this month, poor science. Well, another problem with science is that it really struggles to accept that experience is fundamental. In a way that it's fundamental in a way that science doesn't have to be threatened by it. And fundamentally, that's what I'm trying to put forward here. But science has trouble with that. And it has to ground experience in something else, because this is what science does with everything, because it's fundamentally working under the materialist paradigm in that, you know, fundamentally things are at the fundamental level, things are physical. So if we can't explain something through reference to physical phenomena, then either we're doing it wrong or the phenomena that we're trying to explain isn't really real. So that's why science tries to ground experience in the brain, in the body, in chemical reactions and electrochemical reactions, in compounds, in space, in time. because it needs to ground it in something physical. But listen, what I'm saying is that our experience is primary. Even the concept of physicality, and in fact, the experience of what it is that we call physical, the reason we know physicality is because of our experience. And it is so fundamental that we overlook it because it's such an obvious thing. But again, if we overlook the obvious, we're going to create problems because we're trying to ground something that is fundamental in something more fundamental, which doesn't make any sense. What science does is it digs into our experience, it adds on to it, it conceptualizes it, it compartmentalizes it, it draws distinctions, it observes patterns, and it seeks rules and laws and theories on why we experience what we do. Let me give you an example, right, of water. Now, I've got a glass of water sitting in front of me because I've been speaking for the last 40 minutes, and occasionally it's useful to drink some water. But take water for an example. So I'm sitting here looking at the water. Now, all I really know of the water is the appearance of it, and then if I drink it, I know what it feels like, I know what it tastes like. I know that it behaves as a liquid, you know, I can pour it on the floor. You know, these very sensory things, that's what I know. What science will do is, we know these basic things, you know, a child knows this stuff, because this stuff is in largely just preconceptual, it's just direct experience. But it says, that's not enough, you know. Fundamentally, the water is not what we experience of it. Fundamentally, the water is something else. And because of how science operates, it'll say, we can look, and I discussed again last week, actually, in my episode, Science is Addicted to Explanations. I looked at this problem in science, that it tries to ground reality. It tries to ground things in constituent parts, basically. So what science will say is, no, the water is made up of smaller things. You know, it's made up of atoms. It's made up of molecules of H2O. So water is not really our experience of it. Water is H2O molecules that come together to make our experience of water. Yet, it doesn't realize that this is a huge problem. It doesn't realize that the idea of H2O is a concept. Even if you've got an H2O molecule sitting in front of you, which you never do because molecules are so tiny that we never see molecules. We just infer them through experiments and so on. H2O is a concept, and no matter how much we know about what water is supposedly constituted of at a small scale, that doesn't render our experience null. In fact, all of that information is simply an add-on to our experience. It's a conceptual framework for what we're experiencing, because all we experience is at the macro level. So anything about the micro level is purely conceptual. It's an addition to our experience. And it doesn't explain water. It doesn't explain water because it's all conceptual, and concepts can never really explain what the thing that they're referring to. And fundamentally what science is doing is... So listen, let me just back up. You can take the example of water and apply it to absolutely anything. Water was just a silly example to use, a simple example to really explain what I'm saying here. All you have is your current experience. That's all you ever have. And what your conceptual mind does, and much of your conceptual mind is governed and filled with scientific theories and frameworks and so on. What it does is it tries to explain your current experience. Right. it tries to, first of all, put your current experience into a world that exists around you independently of you and is physical, supposedly. And then it also gives you lots more information about that. So it tells you, well, the sun is 93 million miles away. I think that's supposedly how far away it is. If I'm wrong, forgive me, but it doesn't matter. It'll tell you the sun is 93 million miles away, and you say, well, okay, well, that really means that the sun exists independently of me. It's really far away, and I know nothing about it, so it exists independently of me. And my experience is just like the torch in the woods. I'm just seeing a small part of everything that's out there. And you lose touch with your experience because you've conceptualized it so much that you're no longer looking at your experience. And again, I've spoken about, I think it was last week, I spoke about this at more length. This is what our concepts do. Science, what it fundamentally does is it gives more reality to these explanations than to our direct experience. And what I'm saying is I'm sort of flipping the equation here. I'm saying that no, our direct experience is primary because that's what we actually have. You know, we do not have that the sun is 93 million miles away. We have a sun, we can see it. And we can, you know, all we have is our visual experience of it. And we, by the data that we collect about the sun and so on, and gravity, I don't know how they calculate the distance, I can't remember, but we take all this data, which is also just appearing within our current experience, and we, you know, once we put it through our conceptual frameworks and so on, we conclude, well, that means that the sun is this physical thing that exists all this distance away. But that's, we never have that, you see. We cobble it together through concepts. And what science does is it gives more weight to these cobbled together ideas and concepts than to our direct experience. And then it tries to ground everything in those ideas. And what I'm saying is that I'm not necessarily saying that the sun is not 93 million miles away, because within the framework of science, that makes sense. But what I'm questioning is the framework itself. What I'm saying is that, no, our experience is primary. The sun is not, you know, when you're looking at a sunset, the sun is not 93 million miles away. The sun is just as it is. It's just there right in front of you, you see. And this is what science really struggles to grasp. And so what I'm saying is that science adds on and it conceptualizes it, and it draws scientific conclusions which are correct within their own paradigm, but the paradigm itself is not always, it might be practically useful, but it's not, it has serious philosophical and metaphysical problems with it. So, to round off, I want to give you some further insights into what my experience first model implies. And remember that experience just means, is synonymous with awareness, with consciousness, with being, and with life itself. What I'm saying is that life is just the ongoing flow of experience. There's nothing outside your current experience, and that your experience is just your sensory input. And even the word input is problematic because that's an add-on. But again, there's a point where language kind of fails us, and you just have to realize for yourself what experience is. Experience is not grounded in anything, because anything that you try to ground it in is also just part of your experience. You know, you might say, well, my sensory input is only happening because of my body and because of my brain and because I'm in a physical world. But again, all of that is just conceptual, and it's the only reason you can make those concepts is because you're experiencing. It's not the other way around. Experience is not grounded in anything. It's not even, you know, you can't even say that it's taking place anywhere, because the anywhere is within your experience. Now that itself is a total mindfuck. What I'm literally saying is that your visual field is not taking place anywhere. Your auditory field is not taking place anywhere. Your body is not taking place anywhere. Your thoughts are not taking place anywhere. Your emotions are not taking place anywhere. It would kind of be like asking, where's a video game taking place? It's not really taking place anywhere. You know, like, the places in the video game are not located anywhere. You might say they're on a screen, right? But what I mean is, the places that are depicted are not real. And the same happens with your direct experience, your awareness, your consciousness. It's not taking place anywhere. That doesn't mean that, you know, your house isn't real, or that the world around you isn't real. What I'm just saying is that it's not located anywhere, because if you try and point to another location, well, it's like, well, where's that located? And all of it is taking place within your current experience. You see, this is how primary your current experience is. Experience is exactly as it appears to be. So again, the glass of water is exactly how it appears to be. Your concepts of the glass of water are concepts, and those also are just exactly as they appear to be. The images of a brain in a textbook is exactly as it appears. The photo of a brain on the internet is also just as it appears. It's a photo. End of story. All your ideas of anything, of what it means to be alive, of what science is, of what life is, those are just ideas. They're ideas, they're just as they appear to be. I'm not saying they're true or false. I'm just saying they are as they appear to be in your experience. There is nothing behind the scenes of experience. This is a scary insight. And again, these insights are very subtle and very profound, and I could spend a long time trying to decipher and tease them apart and explain them, but just listen, there's nothing behind the scenes of experience. That is, there's nothing behind the scenes of what you're experiencing right now. There's nothing outside your experience. There's no Big Bang. There's no physical Earth. There's no physical solar system. There's just your experience, and all those are just ideas. And even if you were to fly outwards and see the Earth from a distance, there's nothing behind that either. Your experience is exactly as it is in all moments, and it's exactly as it appears to be. And there's nothing other than it. And no amount of science can address this, because this is our fundamental experience of life. This is what we actually have. Everything else is an assumption and a conclusion that we add on or draw from our present experience. And one last insight before we round up is that time is an illusion and a practical construction. Another insight that we could talk a lot about, but again, we're going to have to go into that more next week. Time is largely a conceptual creation. You have all sorts of ideas about what time is, but what's your actual experience of time? What you really experience of time, and don't just take my word for it, investigate it by looking directly at your current experience, as I showed you to do in the guided exercise. All you experience of life is your current experience, and past and future are ideas, and then, you know, they are aspects of your current experience that rely on your memory and your imagination. That's literally all they are, and that's all they have ever been. And so time is something that we patch together. It's our way of understanding our experience. You know, it's our way of understanding that this podcast's, you know, you've been sitting here listening to this podcast for 40 minutes or for however long it's been. But all you have is now. You don't have those 40 minutes. All you have is now, but you certainly have the memory of sitting, having been sitting here for the last 40 minutes. So we, for practical purposes, we patch our experience together, we cobble it together, and we say 40 minutes have passed, but we don't actually know that, right? On a fundamental level, we don't. So time is an illusion, and it's a practical construction, and we infer time, you see. Okay, so next week we're going to continue on this topic to round up this episode, this series, this April series on the philosophy of science. We're going to round up with looking, you know, bringing this all down to a practical level after critiquing science, after bringing in this consciousness first model. What does this actually mean for our lives? How do we use this? How do we apply it? Do we take science seriously? Do we not? Do we forget about the practicalities of life? What does, you know, how does being practical in life compare with realizing that your experience is all there is? And all these questions. So we're crossing the what you might think is a divide between philosophy and practicality. There is no divide, but I want to really show you that that's the case, and I want you to show you that I'm not just philosophizing. So join me for that. And of course, make sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify. New long form episodes every Wednesday. Snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK, 3 p.m. Eastern. And a quick mention, you can stay up to date with my latest episodes and projects via my newsletter. You'll find the link in the description, and you'll find my books in that link as well if you want to go deeper with my work. And I'll also say, if you want to continue listening right now, I would go back to my earlier episodes in April, which I've referenced, and I would also check out the philosophy playlist that is on my website. There is a link to that in the description. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Psychology Podcast, and I'll be back very soon with more. Take care.